everybody. Welcome to another episode of Two Strike Noise, everybody's second favorite baseball history podcast, in which they have covered Hack Wilson and George Burns in the last two episodes. We almost got number one, but we came in number two. I'm one half of the show. My name is Jeff. Joining me, as always, the other half of the show. Mark, you must have not voted for us in that poll, but it's Mark A. Johnston.
Yeah, I wanted to. I really wanted to, but I just thought that there were a couple other shows that were did a little bit better.
Yeah. Who knew there were going to be so many baseball history podcasts talking about those?
I know. There were only, I think, three voters. So I really could have changed things if I had been more biased.
We're over it. Let's get right on to our show. We got a lot to talk about this week. We're getting close to opening day. We're got teams going to Korea. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. So let's get right into it, Mark. And let's start at BP. And let's do it right. Let's talk about Joey Votto, because Joey Votto's back, baby.
He's back.
Yeah, the Blue Jays signed him to a minor league contract. He's in camp. I'm not sure that he's going to make the team out of spring training. It sounds like he's probably going to start in the minor. He's got a late start for spring training anyway. And he signed kind of late. But I found this great story of it's Jerry Seinfeld interviewing David Letterman, or the other way around. I don't know. They both have like kind of talkish shows now, but they're both huge baseball fans. They're both some of my favorites. I'm pretty, I know Seinfeld is. I'm going to assume that you're probably, you enjoy David Letterman.
I used to watch Dave all the time. Yeah. Back in, especially when it was, when he had the show after the Tonight Show.
Yeah. Yeah. I did too. And he used to do those top 10 lists, and they used to be about baseball a lot of the time. They're both big baseball fans. Well, they both had Joey Votto stories to tell. And here it is. It's pretty good.
I went to see the Cincinnati Reds play. That was my boyhood team. Right. There's a Joey Votto. Are you familiar with this guy?
Sure. I know Joey Votto. Yeah,
he was a tremendous player.
Tremendous. Yeah. First baseman.
The stadium is packed, and it's just about this quiet. So Joey Votto comes over to where the batter's box, the on-deck circle, used to be. And so he's standing there, and he's swinging the lead bat, and he says, "This will be my last bat." He's saying this to us. We're in the stands. And we said, "Oh, okay, Joey. Well, good luck." And he said, "I just wanted to thank you for coming to the game." I thought that was the nicest thing. Why is he saying thanks for coming?
He's a nice man.
Has that ever happened to you at a
moment? Yes, it has.
Really?
With Joey Votto. I'm not lying. I was at a Dodger game like a month ago, and Joey Votto, you think I'm making this up?
Yes.
I'm not.
Yes.
I am not. George, you were there, and Joey Votto was standing on first base, and he has these great seats, show business. And Joey Votto turns to me, and he goes, "Hey, Jerry, how you doing?" And I just got, I just leapt out of my skin. I was so excited. Joey Votto knows who I am.
Yeah, yeah. But it was different. I don't want to diminish your little adventure. But he is standing there. The game's in progress.
Yeah.
He's got the weighted bat.
Yeah.
And it's like, "Oh, be sure and get your coat, and thank you for coming over, and we had a lovely evening."
Well,
and
because it's you,
back?
Though.
Well, no, it's not me. It's
You think he goes down the line, the first base line, and says, "And thank you, and you were great, too. Appreciate all your cheering." You're Dave Letterman,
no,
you
but,
idiot.
But baseball...
Joey Votto making fans wherever he goes.
Good stuff.
If you think that is all the audio I have for this BP segment, you would be wrong. It's time for some Ricky audio, which doesn't get better than that. Yeah. So KNBR here is the Giants station. Boo. It's the Giants station on the radio here. And they had Will Clark on one of the shows during the middle of the day, but they inevitably brought up somebody that I am quite familiar with and had a great story about Ricky.
Going back to your playing days, who was the most fun guy to have over at first base when you were playing first base and he was a runner? Who was the funniest guy, or who was the most fun you enjoyed having over there at first? Or did you just hate everybody?
The funniest, hands down, is Ricky Henderson. At first base, this is spring training, I forget which year, and Sigler and McGuire are coming up behind him, so La Russa had put on a stop sign on him. and Ricky's getting pissed. And Ricky, when he was at first base, he always talked in the third person. Say, goes, "Hey, thrill, Ricky here." I go, "No, I know, Rick." So he's getting pissed. He's got the whole sign put on. He's getting mad. He goes, "Thrill, Ricky. Ricky want to run." And I said, "Well, Rick, go ahead on, Jack." He goes, "You got it, Thrill. Ricky gone." So, I look in the dugout there, Roger Craig, he's looking at me. I go, "He's running right here, right?" So we pitch out. Ricky slides in because he's the best there was. He slides in safe at second base. He jumps up and he's pointing at me. He says, "I told you, Thrill, Ricky gone, Ricky gone."
Yeah, that sounds pretty familiar.
That's awesome.
Why do players always need to do the voice? Like, try to imitate Ricky's voice?
I don't know.
I think
Will Clark's voice has gotten deeper over the years.
I don't really remember his voice.
I remember him having kind of a high voice, but it didn't sound like that anymore.
Except for when he does Ricky.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, wow. I can't imagine, though, like stealing during. I've been watching, a lot of spring training games, and I saw one guy steal, and they happen to have somebody, a coach or somebody on from the dugout during that half inning. He's like, "Yeah, it's just checking boxes." So he steals bases during the regular season. Probably won't see him steal another one, in the spring. He just wanted to do, get one. But Ricky always wanted to go. Spring training, oh, yeah. Exhibition, softball, doesn't matter. Found a great old ad from a newspaper that is from 1934, 1935. And it's actually, it's an ad, but it's meant to look like a story, like a news story. It's actually written by Frankie Frisch. And the headline is 21 out of 23 St. Louis Cardinals smoke camels.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know who the other two world champion Cardinals are that don't smoke camels or do. Maybe they're just, maybe they don't smoke. Probably
what
not.
Are they crazy? I mean, that builds muscles.
I've got pictures that I love. And some, like a couple of them, there's one of Keith Hernandez just in the dugout with a heater in the middle of the game, there's what we talked about, Earl Weaver, that had that special pocket in his jersey, literally so that he could keep his cigarettes in it. Jim Leland used to smoke in the dugout. Yes. And he kept getting fined, so he would just go down the tunnel, but you could still see him smoking down there. Oh, and of course, Babe Ruth was a big smoker. I mean, a lot of those guys. Well, there's some famous picture. I forget who it is. It's during one of the first Super Bowls. And the quarterback, I don't remember. It's football, so I don't remember. But it's a very well-known quarterback in the locker room at halftime smoking a cigarette. Should I be doing that during my games?
I remember seeing Ray Guy, the punter for the Raiders, puffing on a butt. It was like at halftime, and I look down and I see him, and he's just smoking away. And I'm like, well, I guess he's just a punter. He didn't have to really hustle out there. And plus, he kicks it a mile.
I do know who Ray Guy is. Isn't he the greatest punter of all time? He's like in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, he was way ahead of all these other modern punters who can boot the ball a mile. He was just heads and above any other punter in that era.
So, okay, 21 out of the 23 world champion Cardinals smoke. Ray Guy smokes. I mean, I guess it's kind of like the anthem, right? That if you don't sing the anthem, somebody has died. And if you do sing the anthem, nobody has died. I think the cigarette smoking might be key to being a Hall of Famer.
It makes you wonder if Mendoza had smoked, if he had hit Mario better Mendoza. Than 200. Yeah.
Well, he did hit better than 200. Do we have to go through this again?
Yes, we do.
No, we don't. It's not the Mendoza line. Was it 215 or 220 is what it should be? That's his lifetime average. Let's see here. Also, somebody that I did just mention, Keith Hernandez, who is a source of endless entertainment. I guess his Twitter got hacked a while ago, and his Twitter was asking for people's information because he was going to sell 10 laptops, of which he was going to autograph. Whoever hacked his account said, "Hey, I'm selling these MacBooks and I'll sign them. Just send me your credit card number."
Oh, nice. And some people, quote unquote, bought.
I should be getting one anytime now.
Yes, Keith was actually called out for smoking on Seinfeld.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
because Elaine wasn't a fan.
Yeah, and then they wanted to talk about some political stuff, and they were not going to agree. Of which apparently was taken right out of Keith's real life. But let's. So this is Keith had an epiphany last week during a broadcast here, looking at the uniforms, because they were talking about uniforms, shocking. But here's Keith being completely oblivious.
I did not notice the number was on that on the stomach side. I did.
What do you mean?
The number down. I didn't notice.
But you didn't know that there was a number there?
Yeah. I haven't noticed all spring.
Keith.
I forget it. Don't pay attention to me. We didn't have a number down there when I played.
Yeah, you did.
We did? No.
Oh, yeah.
Really? I know we have a number on our backs.
Definitely the number on the back.
So Keith Hernandez completely unaware that baseball uniforms have a number in the front.
The Mets jersey, I mean, it's been that way forever.
Since 1965, they've had numbers on the front of their jerseys. His entire
Mets
career,
had it, doggone it.
His entire career with the Mets, he wore, and I don't think the Cardinals did. Yeah, maybe that's where he's getting confused. The Cardinals, I don't believe, did when he played for them. I could be wrong. And Cleveland, I don't think, did when he had that short stint there at the end of his career. But he's
completely oblivious. That's funny.
Completely oblivious. I found this one on social media, but from a Twitter account called Baseball and the Law that I follow. It's a bunch of good stuff on it. They posted the story that, remember when Marge Schott got suspended? Well-deserved suspension. Get her out of there. Apparently, that suspension also was meant to include Shotzi, too.
Oh, no.
So remember, Shotzi, first of all, was Marge Schott's pet St. Bernard, a very large dog that she used to walk around on the field during BP and would sit with her in the stands during the games. Well, once that dog passed, she got Shotzi, too. Very original name. She's named after herself. Yes.
Right.
Bud Selig had to come out and say for sure that Shotzi 2 is included in the suspension and is not allowed on the field at any point.
What did Shotzi do?
Guilt by association, I guess. Marge Schott's attorney said, I think this is silliness. To my knowledge, Shotzi has never made any offending remarks.
Yeah, I don't remember Shotzi saying anything offensive.
Yeah. So they thought they did kick around the idea of putting him in a chicken costume and letting him walk out there and just saying that he was the San Diego chicken.
Yeah, it would have been a bit of a rotund short chicken, but it might have worked.
Very short. Let's see, Mark. This is show number 244. Wow. So what we've been doing now, we've been coming up with a baseball fact based on the number of the show. So you went first last week. I'm going to go first this week for my show 244 fact. And that is that in 2002, Barry Bonds had a weighted runs created plus of 244. Now, that is the highest single season in the history of baseball for WRC plus. This is a season just one season after he hit 73 home runs. This year, he only hit 46. Only hit 46. He had a 582 on base. Goodness. And he hit 370 still with this. Remember, he walked like, what was it?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, 198 times he was walked.
That's ridiculous.
That, believe it or not, led the league that year with 198 walks. His BABIP was 330. Which I thought, wow, that's really impressive. A 330 for batting average for balls in play. So that subtracts strikeouts, obviously walks, and home runs, though. And I'm like, wow, well, that's pretty good. And that led me to ask myself, you know, what is the highest ever BABIP? Because I thought that was pretty high. But then the more I thought about what BABIP actually means, the more I realized that it was nowhere close. Because you know, if you're hitting a lot of home runs and walking, it's not going to be as high as if you're just a singles hitter. Well, the record is Ty Cobb in 1911 with a 443 BABIP. That means if he put the ball in play, just about half the time he was getting on base.
And that's impressive.
Yeah, it makes sense because Ty Cobb didn't hit a lot of home runs, obviously, except for that one time to prove a point that we've talked about.
I'll show you how to hit home runs. See, it's boring.
Yeah. He hit only 8 home runs that season while having 248 hits. So 240 hits that weren't home runs. Incredible. But that all kind of came off of that WRC plus of 244, which in fact is the single season record. All right. So what do you got?
Well, my immediate thought was, you know, someone who hit 244, and I thought that's boring. What about a pitcher with 244 wins? So I got onto the list and I said, okay, look what we got here. We got Dennis Martinez and Jack Powell with 245, and then Juan Marichal with 243. So that didn't work out so well.
So nobody has ever ended a career with 244 wins.
No, they have not. However, Juan Marichal, my dad's favorite pitcher, just thought to point that out, did not let me down because he actually had 244 complete games in his career.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm going to put that in a little bit of perspective here. Let's take a look at the active complete game leaders. Mm-hmm. We have Justin Verlander, who has pitched for 18 years with 26, and followed closely by Clayton Kershaw with 25. So Marichal, not bad, 244 complete games. Love him. He's a great Hall of Famer and someone that I like to talk about.
When we get to the main story for this week, just remember complete games, because I've got somebody that we're going to be talking about complete games with.
Okay.
So good fact, good tie-in, professional podcasting.
Yeah, we knew that.
Yeah. Well, you totally know what my subject is. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we don't really discuss
that
it before.
No, we really don't. That is something I've realized that other podcasts, they plan all this stuff out. They've got Google Sheets and Run Sheets. And we just say, hey, your story this week, right? And yep. And then we just show up and there we go.
Well, I like to be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to do, because if you tell me, yeah, I'm doing a story this week on Juan Marichal, I'm going to go and read about Juan Marichal. So I'd rather you just tell me.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, reading is hard.
Reading is, it's also fundamental, though.
That's true. RAF.
All right. Let's get to our trivia question. I do believe this might be our last week with trivia. I think we might get some debuts next week, which I'm excited about. Last week, though, I asked the question, who was the last living person inducted into the Hall of Fame without having to wait 5 seasons after retiring? Now, I got several emails, people reached out to me clarifying something because I said specifically, well, I meant to say, that's easy for me to say. I meant to say specifically that it was not Lou Gehrig. And apparently I kept saying Joe DiMaggio instead of Lou Gehrig, because obviously Lou Gehrig was suffering from ALS and was not going to probably lived those 5 years. So they inducted him as soon as he retired. I said, you know, not him, but I kept saying Joe DiMaggio for some reason. But I can tell you this, because I did say that that person was not the answer, which, Mark, I understand people have reached out to you with that as the answer.
The popular answer, in fact, I believe everybody gave us the answer that wrote in Lou Gehrig.
Well, that is wrong, and it's not the case. But let's see here. So the answer, and I did, you know, I do want to say, I did mention, you know, the first one or two inductions of the Hall of Fame, they waived that. This was not a rule until a little bit later. But the answer, and I phrased the question very specifically when I said the last living person, not living player, to be inducted. Because there used to be that 5-year waiting rule. I think there still is a waiting rule. But I was looking for a manager He had a great career as a player, but nowhere near being Hall of Fame worthy. He won two World Series as a player with the New York Giants in 1921 and 22. But the old professor, Casey Stengel, was inducted into the Hall of Fame the year after he retired managing the Mets in 1965.
Ah, okay, okay. That makes sense.
So you know why I think he retired? He finished managing the Mets in 1965. I think he called it quits because they started wearing the uniform number in front.
He was not a fan of the uniform
number. That was the final straw. But he was elected the next year in 1966 as a manager. So Casey Stengel, the answer.
Nice. Okay.
So just prepare for the emails and DMs now.
I fully expect. We got a lot of answers.
Well, and I also said the last living person, right? So he was alive when he went in. It's not like, and I brought up Roberto Clemente too. I made clear that they did not pass away and the last one. So this is 100% the answer. Give us the best you got. <'Cause I
know>. All right. Well, we did have some nice people write in and tell us that they love the show and give us the answer anyway. So,
all right.
By the way, Chris Cook is back. We shamed him for not listening.
Oh, he's back. Well, that's good. Well, then we got to find somebody else to shame. Now, if this is all it took was mentioning that they don't listen anymore, we'll bring that back up.
That's hilarious to me.
All right, question for next week. And I found this one on social media. So if you've seen this, maybe. I mean, it was a couple of weeks ago I pulled this. But who are the only two pitchers in Major League Baseball history with 80 or more career wins whose first or last name are the same of an American city with at least 500,000 inhabitants within the city limits?
That's pretty specific, man.
Plug that one into Stathead and see what you get.
Go over that one more time so they don't have to hit rewind.
There are two pitchers in Major League history with 80 or more career wins. 80. That's the cutoff. Well, I guess they're just going to look at who has 80 or more career wins and look for city names. Whose either their first name or their last name are the same as an American city, a city here within the United States that has at least 500,000 people within the city limits.
80 wins, 500,000 residents.
Yep.
Okay. And I'm going to go with Nathan Detroit.
Well, okay. Who is
Guys
the
and
second?
Dolls reference.
Oh, I didn't get that. No.
No.
Nathan, because that's just like Steve Centerfielder that you always bring up or something like that. So I just assumed that that's what you were doing. But no. All right. Let us know. You can find us. Well, you can look in the show notes where to find us, or you can wait till the end of the show. We'll tell you where you can get a hold of us. But Mark, let's let the ground screw come out and do their stuff. We got to get right into this week's main topic because I've already teased it enough. Mark, this week it's going to be my turn to tell a story, and I am going to talk about one Mr. Bob Robert Carruthers.
Okay.
Have you heard of Robert Carruthers?
Just now.
Just now. Yes. All right. Well, he was born in 1864. He stood 5'7" tall, weighed 138 pounds at his heaviest. He was like the bizarro Randy Johnson. He's a pitcher, by the way, which I guess I should have mentioned that before I wrote that great line. He was always small, and as a child, not a healthy individual. Every source, though, I read about him mentioned that he was sickly as a child, but none of them actually told me what the issue was. So I... maple syrup urine disease? I don't know. That's a real thing.
Fever? What's going on?
Well, cat scratch fever, I was wondering. Lupus?
That's possible.
I don't know. Whatever it was, though, he was always small, but he played baseball. He started out in the Northwest League in 1883. Started out as an outfielder, and then the next season, they put him on the mound. Two positions he would continue to play throughout his career. He was 20 years old when he made the major leagues. His debut was with the St. Louis Browns after being purchased by show alum Chris Vonderaugh. That's a long one. I think we were in less than 100 shows when we did the Chris Vonderaugh
episode. Days.
Very interesting guy. In only 26 games, though, Carruthers went 7-2 with 13 appearances on the mound, and he hit .268, third highest on the team in just under half a season of playing in his rookie year. It was a precursor of things to come, though. Okay, maybe not so much a precursor, because what he did the next season was absolutely crazy. Bobby, and we're close, so I can call him Bobby. Bobby started 53 games on the mound. He won 40 of them, and that led the league, believe it or not. 40 wins. Yeah. He also posted a league-leading 2.07 ERA in 485 innings pitched. I'm not sure what blows my mind most here, the 40 wins or the 482 innings pitched.
Wow.
That's an innings eater right there.
Yeah, pretty much every inning.
Yeah. The Browns won 79 games as a team that season. He won 40 of them, helping them win the American Association pennant. His bat was not quite as impressive as the 40 wins. In 60 games in the outfield, he only hit .225 and was pretty average when he wasn't on the mound this year. Again, though, the team won the pennant. They went on to play a de facto World Series where they ended the 7-game series against the White Sox in a tie because, you know, that's how World Series are supposed to end, in a tie. That's the idea.
Yeah, that's great.
It's very honorable. We also know that the first real World Series didn't really take place until 1903 anyways. After the season, Vondra is looking at the numbers from the season and thinks, might be a good idea to sign this guy that won more than half our games to a new contract. The problem was Bob had fled the country. He was vacationing in France for an extended period of time, as one does. You would think that maybe his agent would just handle this, or maybe they jump on a Zoom call, but apparently in 1886, these things did in fact not exist. So negotiations took place via telegram, which I guess is better than the alternative, which was carrier pigeon. Those birds would have probably had to jump on a boat, and then once the boat docked, then they could fly. Yeah,
they're not going to fly the whole of the Atlantic.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that either. This was obviously not a quick negotiation. This earned Bob a nickname, Parisian Bob. Very original. I mean, it's okay, but if he's in France doing this, I would have gone with something like Bougie Bob, but whatever. $2,000, that's what was settled upon for a 40-game winner. That's worth about $66,000 today. Can you imagine if Ohtani was signing for $66,000? The A's might have been in on the bidding if that... No, who am I kidding? They would not have.
Yeah, maybe no. Not, but...
A little pricey. Regardless, though, he was worth every penny. He followed up his 40-win season, going 30-14 with a 2.32 ERA. He did throw almost 100 innings less, so he was only out there for 387 innings this season. So... pitching might have been down a little bit, if you can say that, but his bat certainly got hot. In 87 games as an outfielder, he hit .334, led the league with a .448 on-base percentage. That's like Barry Bonds-esque. He walked 64 times and stole 26 bases. The 26 bases with the asterisks because of the first to third thingy that we always talk about. He slugged .527 by hitting 4 home runs, but he also grabbed 21 doubles and 14 triples. This effort, it's just an incredible offensive season. Plus, he won 30 games as well with all this and almost pitched 400 innings again. This effort led to another American Association pennant and another matchup with the White Sox in the wannabe World Series, where this time the Browns got a clean 4-2 win in a series that was met with only slightly less ambivalence in St. Louis than throughout the rest of the country. During the offseason, it was reported that Bob's small stature was due to a heart problem. Upon hearing this, in a local paper wrote, quote, Mr. Vondra would do well to sign more with the same malady, end quote. Having read this, Bob himself chimed in on the subject with what I feel is more of an official diagnosis. He said, quote, my heart did seem to be a bit out of kilter, but I feel much better now, end quote. I'm not a doctor, but that sounds pretty official to me. So I'm guessing the diagnosis was out of kilter heart.
Yeah, I mean, he would know.
Yeah, he would know. He could feel it. Just like Mark and Wax Facts Heroes, the Browns were a dynasty. 1887 saw St. Louis win yet another pennant. Bob led the way, going 29-9 on the mound with a 3.32 ERA, 341 innings pitched, and a league-leading 1.167 whip. Jeez. At the plate, Bobby only hit .357. 463 on base, and an OPS of 1.010, including 49 stolen bases, again with that asterisk at the end of it. But still, that's a heck of a season. For the first time in 3 years, the Browns did not meet the White Sox in what I'm now calling the Galactic Series, but rather they faced the Detroit Wolverines. I loved the Detroit Wolverines in Red Dawn. That was my favorite part of that movie, the original one.
Absolutely.
After finishing the past two series with the totals of 4-4 and 4-2, the Browns lost this series 10-5. So there were obviously some rule changes to the World Series, apparently. They played these games in different stadiums across the East. Basically, they were barnstorming for this series. They even played multiple games in one day in multiple locations. So this didn't seem very serious. As I mentioned before, nobody cared about these games. They were really like the A's games in Las Vegas last weekend. The owners wanted it to mean something, but nobody really cared. The players were firmly in the don't care camp themselves. They took a lot of... There was a lot of off-field cavorting that got several of them into trouble as they traveled from town to town. Parisian Bob was an excellent pool player. I just wrote here, insert Music Man joke here for my diehard fans, but I forgot to write one, so that's the joke. He worked the billiard halls as they toured and got in some trouble there. Vondra was not happy about his team's performance that they had lost this series, and he pinned the losses on no other than the guy who in the four seasons previously with the team, where they had won three consecutive pennants, and he went a combined 106-38 on the mound with a 2.51 ERA and over 1,200 innings pitched. I also might mention that he started 142 games. He finished 141 of them. So that's 141 complete games right there. Also at the plate during that time, he hit a combined 313 with a 409 on base and an 879 OPS. But sure, it must have been Bobby's fault. But
right.
Nobody ever said owners were smart. So Bob Carruthers was put on the market. Just like today, a team from New York was really the only place he was going to end up going to. Specifically, in this case, it was Brooklyn. The biggest problem, though, that Brooklyn had when completing this deal to get Carruthers from St. Louis was that they needed Bob's mother to okay it. Not sure if she was his agent or he was just a mama's boy, but she eventually agreed to let her son go to the big city, and off Bob went. The amount Brooklyn paid for Bob to come from St. Louis was the second most ever for a baseball player after King Kelly's contract just 2 years earlier. Another early show we talked about,
yes,
King Kelly.
Yes, we sure did.
But the amount that they actually were paying Bob himself was the most ever paid to a player. Carruthers would be paid over $6,000 a season. Now, the average U.S. household at this time was earning about $500 a year. So now we're starting to talk a little bit more about Ohtani-like money for the time. During the offseason, Bob got married to Mamie Danks, no relation to Bobby, as far as I could tell. And again, Ohtani right there got married during the offseason. Another similarity there. They reportedly received more than $4,000 worth of gifts. That is on top of his salary. So that first year, he's making $10,000, where the average household is making $500. Several other Brooklyn players also got married in the offseason, leading to the team being given the nickname that we have mentioned many times before, the Brooklyn Bridegrooms. That's how they got their name. Got a bunch of guys married during the offseason. The change of scenery didn't affect Bob. He went 29-15 on the mound with a sub-3 ERA, but his offense took a big hit. He only hit 230 and only managed a 328 on base. In 1889, though, Brooklyn got what they'd hoped for. Burrow Bob, see, I'm giving him different nicknames depending on where he is, because he's not in Paris anymore, so he's not pre-drawn.
Gotcha. Yes.
Burrow Bob, for the second time in his career, won 40 games. He went 40-11 with a 3.13 ERA in 50 starts. So he came in from the bullpen a couple of times. I think it was like six or seven times.
Yeah.
50 starts and 51 decisions, just for our math. Again, he pitched over 400 innings, 445 to be exact. The OG Bridegrooms won the pennant, but lost to the crosstown rival Giants in the best of 11 World Series, 6-3. I feel like they're just rolling like a 20-sided die to determine how many games the World Series would be at this point.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know it went to best of 11. I imagine the television contract was pretty massive.
Oh, so. Yes. In 1889, that right, TV yeah. was all the rage. 1890, the Bridegrooms moved to the National League, where Bob led them to yet another pennant with a 23-11 record. He threw only, and I say only, 300 innings, but his on-base with the bat was nearly 400. So, you know, getting it done both ways. Again, when they rolled their D&D dice this time for the World Series, it ended on a 7, which sounds a little bit more normal. They did, however, allow a game to end in a tie. So did the series with the Louisville Colonels, 3-3-1. So they couldn't even figure it out once they got the right number of games. That Colonels team, by the way, did not have our man, Pete Browning, on that team. But it did have our other man, Chicken Wolf, was still on that team.
Oh, good, yes.
Pete Browning shows up in a lot of these, along with the Gabbies. Not going to lie, 1891, Bob starts to slow down. He's only 27 years old at this time. But in his seven-year career so far, he's thrown 2,430 innings. Now, sometimes we make up, like, huge numbers to exaggerate things. That is in 7 years of his career at this point, 2,430 innings. Jamie Moyer threw 4,074 innings over 25 years. Bob threw 60% of that in 7 seasons. Goodness. Bob still threw 300 innings, but he didn't have the team behind him that he had had the previous years. And his record flirted with 500. He went 18-14. His 7th straight season with double digits wins. And at the plate, he hit .281 with a .372 on base. Clearly, people knew something was up with Bob, though. He was released by Brooklyn and ended up back with his original team, the St. Louis Browns, for the 1892 season. It would be Bob's last in the big leagues on the mound. Throwing those 2,400-plus innings in 7 seasons had basically allowed Bob's arm to move as if independent from his body. That's a deep cut for anybody that got that one. Bob only appeared in 16 games and for the first and only time in his career had a losing record with a 2-10 mark. He pitched only 100 innings, but his bat was still of value, hitting almost right at his career average at .281. He continued to make the starting 9 easily as he took over as the player manager for the second half of the season. So no benching for Bob. He wouldn't pitch anymore in the big leagues, one because of his dead arm, but also 1893 was the year that the pitching rubber was moved back to 60 feet 6 inches, so Bob probably couldn't have gotten the ball over the plate even if he wanted to. But he did go on to play one more season in 1893, splitting time between the Chicago Colts and the Cincinnati Reds as an outfielder. Bob tried to stick around in the minor leagues playing some first base, so he wouldn't have to throw the ball, but he couldn't raise his arm. Remember Jason Kendall at the end of his career couldn't
yes.
raise his arm above his head, which for a catcher, it's kind of a necessary part of the game.
Bummer, yeah.
Yeah. No longer able to play, Bob became an umpire, becoming Balls and Strikes Bob. So we already have learned that Bob's marriage led to the bridegroom name for the Brooklyn team. He also was involved in forming what might be the best rivalry in the entire universe, at least according to those in New York and Boston. As an American League umpire, Bob was working a game between the Boston Americans and the New York Highlanders. A couple of the Highlanders, not happy with Bob. They took umbrance on a couple of his balls and strikes calls and let him know about it, to the point that one of the Highlanders grabbed Bob by the collars of his shirt and was yelling at him, you know, while grabbing his shirt. Bob started tossing players, but they didn't want to go. They were so mad they didn't want to leave. Bob calmly took a seat in one of the dugouts, pulled out what I have to assume was a pocket watch on one of those long chains, and said, "If you guys aren't out of here in 2 minutes, this game is over." Not wanting to forfeit, they left, and quote, "The tone was set. No New York-Boston game would ever be meaningless, despite what the standings said." End quote. That is a baseball historian said in what must be one of our favorite books, Mark, because it's called Red Sox Century.
Yes.
We're big fans.
That's what
we do. Yeah. Big Red Sox fans. Bob's health would start to fail and it would go downhill quickly. He was drinking a lot, causing a lot of trouble. No doubt in those pool halls, all the miscreants hanging out there. In fact, he was sentenced to 20 days at a workhouse, which I had to look up what that is. It's essentially a church-forced work environment. So really like public service instead of jail time is what it was. But before he could serve his sentence, Bob passed away at the age of 47, which, by the way, is 2 years younger than Jamie Moyer was when he retired.
Hmm.
According to Bob Saber bio, among all the pitchers in the history of Major League Baseball who have 200 or more, who have won 200 or more games, only Whitey Ford had a higher winning percentage than Carruthers. Ford's is 690 and Carruthers 688. During his career, he threw 298 career complete games. In his 310 starts, there were only 12 games that he started that he did not finish.
Oh, come on, Bob.
What were Marshall's career complete games again?
Show 244.
Show 244. All right. Well, that's an easy way to remember it, isn't it? Let's see. Including that, he had 24 shutouts and a career ERA of 2.83, 2,228 and two-thirds innings pitched. He also batted .282 lifetime with 29 home runs and 259 RBI. There have been some calls for Bob to get into the Hall of Fame several times. I believe he is next eligible in 2025 for another review. If you are interested in more about Bob Carruthers, he is active on both Twitter and Instagram, if you look.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive since he passed away back in the late 1890s.
Yeah. To be specific, he died in 1911, actually.
Oh, okay.
So right before the Titanic.
Right.
And Fenway Park opened. But yeah, he is still active on Twitter and Instagram if you want to get a hold of him. That's Parise and Bob. The Shohei, I don't want to say the first Shohei Ohtani because everybody played two ways at this point. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people. But I mean, to win 40 games twice in your career, overall record of 218 and 99 in only 9 years.
Goodness sakes.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive for Bobby.
Man, I'm shocked that it took as long as it did for him to get the dead arm.
I know.
He's tossing 400 innings a year.
And he was so little, too. I mean, he wasn't one of these big gangly guys that, you know, just whips it in there. He's little. He's got to put his body. But remember, this was before the 60 feet, 6 inches. He probably started before the mound was even a thing. It was just a box.
But right.
Yeah. Bob Carruthers. There we go.
Very interesting, Jeff.
All right. That's going to do it for the main segment of the show. Mark, let's head to the final segment, the newly minted, maybe one or two other exhibition games. It's the new form, but the old name. It is time for Wax Packs Heroes. Pack Heroes. Stars in his eyes. Wax Pack Hero. Gonna pull a Wax Pack Hero. Stars in his eyes.
Now, we've gotten some emails on the new format, and people generally like it very much.
I'm glad because I love it, and we're going to keep it. The people have spoken. We're going to keep it. Let's see. If you are new here, this is what we do. We're going to open up a couple of wax packs, true wax packs this week. We're going to be opening up some 1988 Fleers this week. What we're going to do, we're playing first to five. It's kind of like war. We're each going to draw a card, and whoever has the highest baseball reference war from that year is going to win that round. Couple of things can add or subtract to that total, though. Any 80s baseball aesthetics that we enjoy on the card. That means real stirrups. It means a good mustache. It means eye black, flip down glasses, anything like that. We kind of will judge as we see them. You get an extra 10th of a point. If it's a really good mustache, like Tom Selleck, Wade Boggs, you can get even a bonus. So that would be 2/10 of a point there. But if they're wearing those 2-1 stirrups, which we do not like, that is a -10th of a point. Any awards won that year, Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, MVP, All-Star, or Gold Glove, that's a half a point each. If there's a Hall of Famer on the card, whether they're in focus or not, that's a whole extra point because they're Hall of Famers. If either of us pull Ricky Henderson, I think we're just going to say, we should just say automatically wins that round. Let's change that rule for this version and see how it goes. Chances are we're not going to pull a Ricky or Nolan.
No, if Ricky comes out against Nolan, which the odds are vast.
Then we're looking at the war for that year.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Vulcan knife fight between
or how about this? We look up their at bats against each other that year and judge that way.
Ooh, okay. I'm up for a Vulcan knife fight.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard since this is something in the past for that to happen, but we'll see. If Nolan Ryan comes up, though, Mark automatically wins that round unless Ricky is pulled as well. Any pop culture references that we can easily find, that's half a point, unless it's Seinfeld, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, or The Simpsons, because that's a whole extra point, because those are awesome. If the player was suspended for anything, like the Mitchell Report or anything else that they shouldn't be doing, which I think we missed one last week, my Daryl Strawberry. I don't think we hit him up for the suspension, but it would not have affected the outcome anyway. But all that, we're going to add those up. First one to five is the winner. I'm undefeated in this new format so far, so I really like it. But Mark, I got two packs here, left hand, right hand. Which one would you like?
You know, I've been unsuccessful with the right hand pack, so I'm going to try it again.
All right. Well, you know, it's spring. This is an exhibition, so.
Yes. Yeah. We're working on new pitches is what we're doing.
Yeah. All right. So you've got yours there. Let me open mine since we got to open these at the same time now. Bunch of different logistics with this thing. All right. So your first card is a shortstop for the Texas Rangers. It is Scott Fletcher. Didn't we have him last week? Isn't he George W. named his dog after him?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Yep, that is. So we had Scott Fletcher last week. So we already know you're going to get the pop culture points there. Let's just take a look at 82 with the Rangers. 140 games, 276 average, 364 on base. No home runs, 47 RBI, 8 stolen bases, a 94 OPS plus. And that is good for a 4.1. Let's see. He has got eye black on here. You got to like that. I can't tell if those are real. I'll say those are real stirrups. We'll give you that. So that'll be a 4.3 plus the pop culture will be a 4.8, which is not bad.
No, I didn't expect that from Fletcher. I should have because we just had him last week.
All right. My card is Montreal Expos pitcher Randy St. Clair. Well, I'm not sure if we've ever had Randy St. Clair on this before.
Doesn't sound familiar.
Let's see. In 1988, he split time between the Expos and the Reds. Overall, 9 years in the big leagues. Montreal, Atlanta, Minnesota, Cincinnati, and Toronto. Let's see. Combined in 88, he went 1-0. with a 3.86 ERA in 16 games, 21 innings pitched, 24 hits, 14 strikeouts, and a 97 ERA plus. And that is good for a WAR of minus 0.2, which I don't think
A bit of a high whip that year.
What is it?
His whip was 1.619.
Oh, well, that's for a starting pitcher, especially. That's, not good. Son of former major league catcher Ebba St. Clair.
Okay.
I've not heard of Ebba St. Clair. He was a catcher, switch hitter, threw right-handed. Of course he did. Pittsburgh Pirates and yada, yada.
I think Ebba St. Clair is the hospital in St. Elsewhere, isn't it? I have no idea what I'm talking about.
There's a good poll right there. All right. You're up 1-0 there after our first cards. Next is he didn't hit the shot heard round the world. He was on the 89 Giants when they went to the World Series, though. It's Robbie Thompson.
Second baseman, Robbie Thompson.
Let's see. 11 years in the big leagues, every one of them for the San Francisco Giants. Good news for you. 1988 was his lone All-Star year. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was also in 93, but 88, his first All-Star year. 138 games played, 264 average, 323 on base, 7 home runs, 48 RBI, 14 stolen bases. Nice. 107 OPS plus, and that is good for a 3.7 WAR. Nothing else is going to help you on this card. First round draft pick by the Giants in 1983. Yeah, not much. Nothing else on this card is going to help you out. So you're at a 3.7. And going up against Robbie Thompson is, oh, wow. Well, he went on to have a good career. I've got to assume this might be his rookie card. Shortstop for Cleveland, Jay Bell. When I think of Jay Bell, I think of either Pittsburgh or Arizona.
Yeah.
But let's see, came up with Cleveland 3 years. He was just up for cups of coffee. 1988, his final year with Cleveland, 73, which is his career high at that point, games. Overall, an 18-year career. Let's see, Pittsburgh, Arizona, Cleveland, Kansas City, and the Mets. In 1988, in those 73 games, he only hit .218, .289 on base, two home runs, 21 RBI, and a 59 OPS plus, and altogether, that is a minus .7
war. Ouch.
Not even sure it's worth looking up anything here. Let's see, first round draft pick by the Twins, but he was traded to Cleveland for Burt Blyleven.
Oh, wow.
Interesting stuff there.
And he faced Blyleven in his first major league at bat.
Wow.
And hit a home run.
Oh, wow. That'll show him.
That's weird.
Yeah, that second round goes to you. You're up 2-0.
Right on.
All right.
Actually winning.
You get my favorite left-handed pitcher that ever put on an Oakland A's uniform. And I say that very just dripping in sarcasm. It's Rick Honeycutt.
Thought you were going there, yes.
I just love that the word cut is in his name when one of the things that he's probably remembered for most is trying to cheat with a thumbtack and then cutting, slicing his forehead with it. Maybe that's just me. Let's see, Rick Honeycutt, 21 years in the big leagues, Oakland, Dodgers, Rangers, Mariners, Cardinals, and Yankees. 1988, this is like his 85th season in the league already at age 34. With the A's, he went 3-2, 3.50 ERA, had seven saves that year, 79.2 innings pitched, 47 strikeouts, a 110 ERA plus, and that will equal a WAR of 0.3. And there is nothing else here that's going to help you out. Now, he did get suspended for the cheating. I assume we should. I mean, we do say suspended. So, yeah, I think we should do that. So that'll be a minus 0.5 for you right there.
Nice.
Well, yeah, for me, it's nice. It's the best thing he's done for me. Oh, he's traded for Jerry Don Gleaton at one point. Also traded for Dave Stewart.
Oh, wow.
We've had Honeycutt before. There's not a whole lot else besides slicing your own forehead open with a thumbnail you're trying to cheat with.
All Very right, so, professional wrestling-esque, by yeah, the way.
Yeah, he was blading before blading was cool.
Hey, red turns to green, man.
Let's see. So I've got to beat a minus .2. We'll see if pitcher for the Cubs, Les Lancaster, can do it. I'm not holding my breath here. Les Lancaster, 7 years in the big leagues. Cubs, Cardinals, and Tigers. 88 with the Cubs. He went 4-6 with 3.78 ERA. Got three starts, mainly out of the bullpen. 85 innings pitched, 36 strikeouts, 96 ERA plus. And that is good for a WAR of 0.3. Nothing else on this card is going to help me out. So as long as he didn't get suspended, I'm going to be happy. Let's see. At one point, he was the pitching coach of the Ogden Raptors. Got an Ogden Raptors hat somewhere stashed away.
In 703 2/3 innings of work, he made only one error.
Oh, that's very like Greg Maddox-esque. That's hard to say.
Maddox-esque.
All right, so I'm going to win that round. Good for you, Les Lancaster.
There you go.
Beating Rick Honeycutt. All right, let's see here. Well, I feel we're going to be tied after this round. You have got pitcher for the Padres, Eric Nolte.
Okay.
Not Nick, Eric.
Right.
Left-handed pitcher. 4 years in the big leagues, Padres and Rangers. He split time between 1988. Two games he appeared in. No record. 6 ERA even. Three innings pitched, one strikeout, a 66 ERA plus, and a WAR of zero. Just zero.
Better than Honeycutt.
Yeah, it was. Let's see. Is he related to Nick? No. There's just like two sentences in his Wikipedia. So you are at zero, and I have a Hall of Fame outfielder for the White Sox, Harold Baines.
I think you're going to win this round.
Yeah, so I don't think we need to. And, you know, Harold is going to get 80s aesthetic points because he's wearing his hat under his batting helmet.
Beautiful. Nice.
All right, so we're all tied up here. Now, this is why we do this. This is going to be a fun one. You have got outfielder for the Red Sox, Mike Greenwell.
Mike Greenwell, a fine baseball player.
Now, was it 88 or was it 87 where he really should have won the MVP? Let's see, it was 88. So this is going to, I mean, he didn't win it. He was an all-star. He should have won it. But you're going to have a fantastic war here. Overall, 12 years in the big leagues, all of it with the Red Sox. 158 games, .325 average, .416 on base, 22 home runs, 119 RBI, 16 stolen bases, a .160 OPS plus, and led the league with 18 intentional walks. Came in second in the MVP voting, and that is good for a war of 7.5. The All-Star will be 8. He's got a mustache, so that is 8.1 right off of the bat.
Not bad.
Came in second to Jose Canseco that year, who Jose had twice as many home runs, about the same amount of RBI. Greenwell hit for a much higher average, reached base many more times. That was Canseco's 40-40 season, though, which might be part of why he won that, but still, I think Greenwell was probably more deserving there.
I love this. Nicknamed the Gator.
Oh, you know why, yeah.
Received his nickname for capturing an alligator, taping its mouth shut, and putting it in Ellis Burks' locker.
Yeah. Burks did not like that. Played 7 games for the Hanshin Tigers before he had a higher calling. Went back home. Just, I'm out. What didn't he own? Gator Mike's. Yeah. Mike Greenwell's Bat a Ball and Family Fun Park. Now just known as Gator Mike's. He's no longer involved. We've gone over all this before, but no suspensions. So for you, an 8.1. Now, this is where it's going to be fun because my card going up against Greenwell is Oral Hershiser, who we know in 1988.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't want to talk about the World Series, but we can talk about what he did before that. Hershiser, 18 years in the big leagues, Dodgers, Cleveland, Mets, and Giants. 1988, he was an all-star. He won the Cy Young Award. He won a gold glove. He came in 6th in the MVP balloting. He went 23-8 with a 2.26 ERA. Led the league with 15 complete games and 8 shutouts. Led the league with 267 innings pitched, 178 strikeouts, and a 149 ERA plus. And that is good for a war of 7.2. You're still in the lead. But he won the Cy Young. He was an all-star and a gold glove. So that will take that up to 8.7. Let's see. He has got real stirrups on here. So that will be an 8.8. I don't remember Oral ever. Oh, Oral's been in plenty of pop culture things as well.
He's a competitive poker player.
Yeah. It's been on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, guest star of a Christian children video series. We've talked about this quite a bit. Point being, he's going to take the win here.
Man, that hurts. That hurts. I had Greenwell in a great season.
Yeah, you really did. Now, we could nick Oral for telling on Ricky and Bobby Bonilla for playing cards in the clubhouse when he was with the Mets.
That's right. But
we're not going to do that. All right. So I'm up 3-2. Mark, your next card is outfielder for the Mets, Kevin McReynolds. Let's see. Mac, Big Mac, a.k.a. 12 years in the big leagues. Mets, Padres, Royals, 1988 with the Mets. 147 games, .288 average, .336 on base, 27 home runs, 99 RBI, 21 stolen bases, 142 OPS plus. This is a good year. That is a 4.5. Just looking at this Mets uniform, there is a number on the front of the jersey.
Never noticed.
Yeah, he is wearing real stirrups. He is also not wearing batting gloves, which I am inclined to give points for. What do you say?
Yeah, no, that's a rarity.
Yeah, so that'll be a 4.7 after just looking at the numbers in the card here. First round draft pick by the Padres in 1989. Traded by the Padres to the Mets for Kevin Brown, Sean Abner, Stan Jefferson, and Kevin Mitchell.
Wow, big names.
Yeah.
He was also traded straight up for Vince Coleman once.
Ah, and he was also traded with Greg Jeffries to the Royals for our favorite rapping Cy Award winner, Brett Saberhagen.
There you go.
Those are some good trades right there. Let's see, K-Mac. I call him K-Mac. He's listed as Big Mac, but avid duck hunter and fisherman. All right. Runs a commercial duck hunting club. There's something I don't really need to be a part of, a hunting club.
You've never joined a commercial duck hunting club?
No, or hunting club. There's no need to get me a gun rack. I do not own a gun, let alone many guns, which would necessitate an entire rack. All right. Let's see. So that is a 4.7 for you. And you are going up against pitcher for the Brewers, Jay Aldrich.
Ooh, I may have you here.
I think it's pretty safe to say you're going to win this one. Let's see, Jay, 3 years in the big leagues, Milwaukee, Atlanta, and Baltimore. Did not appear in the big leagues in 1988.
He still would have beat Rick Honeycutt.
He could have a ton of pop culture references, so let's just take a quick peek. Nope, signed on as a replacement player before the resolution of the players' strike in 95. It's never going to make friends and influence people in the baseball world. All right, so that will be a win for you, and that ties us up at 3-3. This is going long. All right, you have got for your next card, catcher for the New York Yankees, Rick Cerrone. Years in the big leagues for Rick Cerrone. Wow. Yankees, Blue Jays, Red Sox, Cleveland, Mets, Atlanta, Expos, Brewers, a lot of teams. 1988 with Boston in 84 games. He hit 269, 326 on base, 3 home runs, 27 RBI, a 90 OPS plus. And that is good for a WAR of 0.9. He's got a mustache here, so that'll be an even one. Now, it looks to me like he has got, instead of wearing a helmet with, you know, with no ear flaps turned around, it looks like he's just got like a skull helmet. Remember when some guys would just wear those? There's no yes. bill on it. I'm going to say that is definitely an 80s baseball aesthetic. So that'll take you up to 1.1. First round draft pick by Cleveland in 75.
Recorded a song in 81.
Oh, that's right. We've talked about it. We've played it. We've got an email about it. That's right.
That's right. A long home run.
Yeah. So that'll be an extra half a point of WAR for you there. Nice. Let's see. Okay. So that'll take you up to 1.6. And you're going up against shortstop here for Atlanta, Jeff Blauser.
Uh-oh.
Aren't you gonna say Blauza, Blauza, Blauza?
No, I've done that enough.
Okay. Let's see. Blauser, 13 years in the big leagues, most of it with Atlanta. 11 and then 2 years with the Cubs to wrap up his career. 1988, only his second appearance in the big leagues, only 18 games. I think that's going to hurt. 239 average, 268 on base, 2 home runs, 7 RBI, 88 OPS plus. 0.5 WAR, because he probably played just about everywhere. First round draft pick by the Cardinals in 84, and did not sign, and then Atlanta picked him in the first round, 5th overall in the secondary draft, and he signed with them. Just curious to see if he... Wow, he had a 5.7 WAR in 1993, and then a 4.8 in 97.
Yeah, he was a solid ball player.
Yeah, he could play just about anywhere in the infield.
Yeah.
But nothing else is going to help me here, so that is going to go to you. You're up 4-3 right now.
And we got the game on the line, man.
Yeah, we're going the distance here. All right. I know you're going to get pop culture points here because this guy did a heck of a job in Reds Hot. Here he is with the Mets, future nasty boy, Randy Myers, who I believe we also had last week.
We did.
So we're not going to go over all his stuff. Just look at 1988 with the Mets. He went 7-3 with a 1.72 ERA. Nice. 26 saves. 188 ERA plus. And overall a 2.8 WAR. He's got a mustache. So that's 2.9. Let's see. We know he was in Reds Hot. So that'll get you an extra 0.5 there. Let's see. First round draft pick by the Mets in 82. Traded for John Franco at one point. Also traded... for Bip Roberts, the Bipper, at one point. But I don't think there's anything else we've got. It was on a Wheaties box, 1990 World Series. We won't talk about that. Yeah, so I think you're in a good position here because my card going up against Randy Myers is Eric Bell, pitcher for the Orioles.
Bell, I do remember that guy.
6 years in the big leagues, Baltimore, Cleveland, and Houston. Bad news again for me. There's a hole here. In terms of big league play in 1988 is in the center of that hole.
Oops.
Yeah, spent the year. Well, he must have been hurt because he only appeared in 7 games that year in Rochester. So nothing there, nothing on the card. I'm not sure that Eric Bell has 3.5 points worth of pop culture reference. Shockingly enough, he has none.
Recall.
Yeah, he has none. So, Mark, there you go. Your first win in the new format.
Nice. It's about time. We've been struggling.
Yeah, do you remember how it feels to win? I mean, it's got to be something new.
Not really. I mean, we're trying to figure it out right now. It's a weird feeling.
Well, bad news for you, this was just an exhibition game.
Yes, but it was, you know, maybe we're back on track.
All right. Well, congratulations to you. That's going to wrap up this episode of Wax Packs Heroes. Also going to wrap up the show for this week. Thank you again for joining. If you want more of us, we're all over the socials. You can just find us at Two Strike Noise. That is at TWO Strike Noise. You can also look in the show notes. All the links are there, as well as an email address that Mark likes to recite.
I do. It's Two Strike Noise, TWO Strike Noise. @gmail.com. Go ahead and write to us. A lot of people have been writing in. I'm going to get to every last one of them. Don't you worry.
Yeah. So if you get anything back from that email address that you don't like, it was from Mark.
Yes,
remember right. That. All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. We'll see you again next week on the next episode of Two Strike Noise.
Thank you. God bless you. Have a great day.